and welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today as we are each Sunday at noon with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get your phone lines going, answering all of your condominium and HOA questions. So give us a call right here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking the email the show tab.
And of course, if you don't want to send us an email, still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars at the Hard Rock, next one coming up this Thursday night, and you can see who the show sponsors are and visit all of their websites as well. And of course, if you'd like to call our law firm Glazer & Associates directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call us at 877-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com.
Well, last show we were joined by David Harari from Kent Security, one of our longtime sponsors, who told us all about the ways that Kent can keep your community safe without bankrupting the association. We spoke about the fact that management companies are being forced to provide more for less money as a result of the economic downturn. And we ended up with some great live radio. I love live radio, which was Brian, the office manager for Glazer & Associates, phoning in live to tell everyone he had just bowled a perfect 300 in the state championship and now is off to Las Vegas for the national title.
That was great live radio, Karen. Again, congrats again to Brian for his perfect score. You know, by the way, Brian's like the John Madden of the bowling world. He simply won't fly on an airplane. So just to show everyone how unselfish some lawyers really are, just let it be known out there that I'm going to suffer the consequences of driving cross-country and the heartbreak of spending three lonely nights in Las Vegas again, this time with no wife, no kids, no work, and I'm going to be forced to eat buffets and gamble all day long.
Poor thing.
Because that's just the good-natured, unselfish guy that I am. I'm always willing to suffer tremendous hardship to help out my fellow man and my brother-in-law. Isn't that right, Scott?
Oh, yeah, Glaze. You're a real humanitarian. Yeah. Oh, yeah, by the way, that orphan called that we foreclosed on last week, she wants her dead parents' house back.
Yeah, but you remember to say that I wasn't in the office when they called, right?
Hey, I do what I'm told.
Yeah. You know, you guys should cut it out. Our listeners may think you're serious.
Hey, anybody that knows me knows that that just can't be serious. I didn't accidentally foreclose on an orphan's home.
Yeah, you didn't accidentally do it. You meant to do it.
Nice. Scott's still mad at me for all the Miami Heat jokes, but they are turning it around. All right, moving on. Over the last few weeks, we kind of ran out of time talking about some new condo or HOA bills that are pending. So let's quickly get back on track and talk about the bill sponsored by Senator Mike Fasano, which is S530. And this one is obviously near and dear to my heart because it involves the director certification requirements. Now, as originally drafted, that bill still allows someone to get certified by signing that silly affidavit instead of attending a course. And I got to tell you, I think that in and of itself needs to be changed because, at least to me, it's a slap in the face, actually, to the people who took the time out and attended the course. But originally, there was actually a bigger problem with the proposed bill because, as written, that new law wouldn't allow you to get certified by taking a course once you actually won the election. You were actually be forced to sign the affidavit. But I wrote a letter to Senator Fasano and spoke to his staff, and I explained that the bill was accidentally poorly worded, and I requested that he make sure it gets fixed. And I have to tell you, he did just that. So thank you, Senator Fasano, for making sure that directors can still get certified by taking a course within 90 days of getting elected. Yeah, good job. And by the way, we again asked Senator Fasano to appear as a guest on the show, and we were told by his staff that he will definitely take us up on our offer and will discuss a lot of the pending legislation out there that both he's promoting and some of the other community association bills that are currently floating sitting around the legislature. Yeah. So we expect to have him on the show.
You know, and if everybody remembers, our law firm always wanted to make sure that someone could get certified before getting elected so they can actually use that to their advantage when running for the board. And sure enough, the new law would allow someone to get certified within 1 year of getting elected to a board.
Yeah, and we always get asked at the seminar if a director has to get recertified every year. And the pending bill says that as long as someone continuously serves on the board, they don't have to get recertified each year. But even if they miss 1 year of service on the board, they would have to get recertified. But again, as Scott just said, now if you took the course within 1 year of getting elected to the board, you are good.
So I guess this is the perfect segue to mention our upcoming seminar this Thursday at the Hard Rock.
It absolutely is. That's right, Karen. Again, we're officially sold out for this Thursday night, which is our sixth consecutive seminar at the Hard Rock. That's March 24th at 7 o'clock. But we now have a seventh seminar scheduled for April 28th. And remember, within 90 days of getting elected to your condo board, you have to get certified or you are suspended from the board. And with a lot of elections happening in January, your time to get certified by taking the course can quickly be coming to an end. So for those of you that still need to get certified, sign up for the free course at the Hard Rock that we teach each month. Again, the next one is this Thursday, March 24th at 7, and it's sold out. But you can show up in person, and you can go on our standby line.
Yes.
And there's a good shot of you getting in from there. And remember, though, there's only one way to register, and that's by going to condocrazeandhoas.com and filling out the form. Again, that's condocrazeandhoas.com. You'll get confirmation back from Brian that you are registered. And again, thank you to so many of our listeners who keep calling in and emailing me, who actually attended the seminar and have so many nice and positive things to say about it. Please know, again, we appreciate your comments and are honored by the opportunity to teach and certify now the hundreds and hundreds of people who have already taken the course, including so many licensed community association managers, because they get 4 continuing education credits for taking the course. Again, our whole staff is really looking forward to meeting everybody this coming Thursday
night. And it's free.
Yeah, again, listeners, like Karen just said, it's free. It's kind of fun. You're definitely going to learn something. It goes by pretty quickly.
It does.
And you get a nice little nosh while everything goes on.
Exactly. How about we take Jeannie from Merritt Island on line one?
Hi.
How are you,
morning.
Jeannie?
Good afternoon. My question is, I'm actually running for the board because I have come to the conclusion the only way of making any changes or being able to be effective at our association is to be on the board.
See that? That's a positive phone call.
Yes.
Someone that's just not calling in and complaining, actually willing to step up to the plate and get involved. Way to go.
Absolutely. Well, you need to be a part, you know, of rectifying, you know, be a part of the solution. I always tell my teenager, you know, don't be a part of the issue.
That's right.
So
if not, you're part of the problem.
Absolutely. I want to be a positive part of our community, and but I feel that a lot of people have issues with keeping business separate from our neighbor being neighborly. And working in the corporate world for so many years, I don't have a problem with that. I was a contract negotiator, and that was, you know, part of what I did. But my question, I don't want to take up your whole time. My question is, in our association, they are very close, our board members, to our property managers. And I have a big issue with that. And you have answered a couple of my emails to help me in situations, which I appreciate. But I am going now. I have requested to make copies of some of our contracts, and I want to look things over. If I am elected, I'm running against 4 other individuals. 2 of them have been on for several years, and they're in their 70s and 80s, and I just don't feel like they're effective anymore. So looking through these contracts, I noticed that we had a garage set storage unit put up that cost us over $40,000, and it was nothing special whatsoever. So I asked our property managers if I could have a copy of the other 2 bids, and she never would reply to me.
Yeah, well.
So she did reply this last week, because I'm going tomorrow to make copies of things, and she said, we were very happy with this contractor we used after the hurricanes that redid our clubhouse, so we decided to use him.
Okay. Question: couple of issues there. Is the contract going to be for at least 5% of the association's budget? If so, it may require competitive bidding. So that's one problem, because it seems as if the association did not engage in competitive bidding. But if they did and they did receive bids, bids are actually considered part of the official records of the association, and they absolutely, without question, must be produced. They are official records. You are entitled to see them. Okay, and it's not just bids. It could be bids for anything.
Well, I called and got a copy of the Florida State statute. Two books, and you can call and request it, and they'll send it to you free. So that was great information, and I believe you gave me that information.
Well, I'm glad we were able to help you out. Thanks for the call, Jeannie. All right, and if you don't get those records, then you may wind up having the ability to file an arbitration action against the association. That is, of course, if the arbitration division still exists.
Ooh.
And yeah, if at least for now it does, but we're going to talk about that a lot, hopefully, on today's show. There's actually a lot to talk about. Actually, just a reminder, 850 WFTL is going to be carrying the FSU Notre Dame game tonight at 9 o'clock. So if you're following the college basketball...
March Madness,
right. Keep your brackets updated right here with 850 WFTL. Let's do this. Let's take our first break. And when we get back, we're going to discuss lots of other changes that may be on the horizon in the very near future for both condos and HOAs, including mandatory membership communities, associations piling on even more fees against delinquent unit owners, associations being able to take all the rent from tenants of delinquent owners,
wow,
and get this, the very real possibility of community association managers no longer requiring a license, and even the complete shutdown of the Division of Florida Condominiums, Timeshares, and Mobile Homes. That's right. You heard me correct. The governor is touting a new bill that would call for no more community association managers and no more Division of Florida Condominiums. Has the legislature gone completely nuts, or are all these changes necessary to cut the state's budget and get owners to pay up? Call them with your opinion, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We will be back after our break.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis. I'm joined with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro, taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. I'd like to go right to the phone lines and Pete in Boca Raton.
How are you, Pete?
Yes, good afternoon, Eric. I really enjoy your informative program, and I'm looking forward to attending your seminar later this week.
Oh, great.
Most definitely. We have an unusual circumstance. We're having a condo board election this week, and I was personally told by one of the owners about a disturbing incident that involved her. About 3 weeks ago, a few days prior to the official ballots being mailed out, the current board president approached her with a ballot and asked her to vote. After she filled out the ballot, she sealed it in the appropriate yellow envelope, signed the outside larger white envelope, which he did not seal, and gave it to him. Shortly thereafter, she reconsidered her premature vote, since she didn't have info on the candidates yet, and requested the management company to return the ballot, which they did. Upon opening the sealed envelope, she noted that most of her votes had been altered.
Wow.
She subsequently confronted the president, who said that someone must have changed the ballot while it was left in his unlocked car. It would seem as though maybe he inserted a revised ballot in another yellow envelope that he had, sealed that envelope, and placed it back into the original unsealed white envelope, and then sealed it. Now, she immediately emailed the management company about the incident to put them on record, but never got a response.
Okay.
Her story has recently circulated throughout the entire complex. However, even though everyone has already voted, could this ballot tampering legally disqualify the current president? And I'd appreciate your thoughts and suggestions regarding these troubling issues.
No problem. There's actually a lot said there because a couple of things. It's pretty interesting that she actually got her ballot back to begin with, because technically once you cast your vote, you're not entitled to actually even get your ballot back. But the fact that she got it back and it came back with fraud, at least to me, taints the entire election process. And I can tell you there's actually arbitration cases in this regard where elections have in fact been voided. So I would send, you know, if I'm representing that owner, I would send a letter to the board demanding that they restart this election process, because obviously it can't be trusted. We have a unit owner who's willing to swear and come forward that her actual ballot was changed. When she got it back, she noticed it. So to me, that taints the entire election process, and the board should start from scratch, and the management company should help out in that regard. That's what I think it should be done.
What is the onus on the management company, and what if this person doesn't want to formally come forward and confront the issue?
Well, if that person formally doesn't come forward, well, let's put it this way. If the board of directors will not do this voluntarily, you know, of their own volition, and agree that there's obviously fraud here,
well, he's on the board, currently.
Right. Understood. But if the board won't voluntarily agree to a new election, I would think she would have the right to file an arbitration action. If she does not, perhaps some member of the community could file an arbitration action separately and wind up having her testify by way of subpoena.
Okay. But
her testimony is going to absolutely be necessary to void this election. No two ways about it. So at some point, you know, either she's going to come forward or someone else is going to come forward, and she's going to have to testify, perhaps not voluntarily.
Okay. The fraud does not disqualify this man from running, though.
Can't prove that he did it. I mean, he's going to say he took the envelope, left it in the office, and that's all he knows.
It was in his car.
Right. Yeah, someone else did it. You know, so there's really there's no way to prove that he did it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
No problem.
Look forward to meeting you later this week. Then.
Thanks again, Pete.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. Take care. How about we go to Deborah in Wellington? Deborah, you
there?
Hey,
thanks,
Deborah.
Thanks for taking my call.
How are you?
I have a question regarding condo questionnaires.
Okay.
How would a high number of rentals influence a bank's decision to fund a mortgage, and what would constitute a high number of rentals, percentage-wise?
I'm not sure what the actual Fannie and Freddie guidelines are anymore at this point, but a bank looks at a rental community as a far less stable community, and basically, let's use the numbers, one-third is a pretty fair figure. If they find out information from a condo community that, let's say, more than a third of the units are actually rented, again, they look at it as an unstable community, a community that's likely to have the values of the property go down rather than go up, and they're therefore less likely to lend to a new purchaser in that community. So it's absolutely a relevant factor. And that's why a lot of communities try, or at least have tried, to limit the number of rentals in their community or do away with renting altogether.
And how would you limit the number? Would you have to amend the documents
if
it wasn't provided for?
Yep, you not only have to amend the documents, but the way the statute was drafted, restrictions on the ability to rent, even if the documents are in fact amended, they don't apply to people who don't vote in favor of those amendments. So it's become, you know, increasingly more difficult to restrict renting in a community if your original documents allow for it. Okay, but I hope that answers your question, Deborah.
I have one other question, if possible. If the association has approval rights for transfer of ownership and approves the sale of a two-bedroom unit to be occupied by two adults and three children, two of which are girls and one is a boy, meaning they should have purchased a three-bedroom unit due to the number of persons in the unit.
Right.
What are the ramifications of this sale for the board and for the new owner?
Now, you say that they should have purchased a three-bedroom unit. Why do you say that? Is that something that's contained in your documents, or is that a personal opinion of yours, or is that contained in some law somewhere?
Yeah, based on the housing authority, they say two heartbeats per room, and children of the same sex can occupy one bedroom, meaning two heartbeats only, but not children of opposite sex.
Yeah, Deborah, respectfully, I think you're going to be hard-pressed to actually find a statute or a code or a housing regulation that actually says that, because I can tell you I'm not aware of it, and a lot of these things we're talking about are actually personal preferences of perhaps parents. So you know, I don't think that that's actually something you're going to find in a housing statute.
I mean, respectfully, most ordinances down here in South Florida, the ones that I've looked at anyway, have to do with square feet, not what type of the room it is. But what you should do is check your declaration of condominium to see if it specifies how many people can live in the unit, because sometimes it will be more stringent than the local ordinances.
Right. Exactly. All right. Thanks for the call, Deborah.
Okay, thank you.
How about we go to, if we're pronouncing it incorrectly, I apologize, but is it SR maybe in Aventura?
SR?
Hello, my name is Suzanne. How are you, Eric?
How are you?
Good, good. I got a question about all the terms about the member of the board. When expired, and the law is saying 718, 112D, he said the term is all the member of the board expired in annual meeting.
Yes,
and the
okay.
new law, you say it's only no more than 2 years.
Okay.
Will you explain to me what the...
Okay, yeah, I understand your question perfectly. You're saying in your community it's two-year terms on a board of directors?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Now, this was changed actually, I don't remember if it was this past July, you know, July 1st. Right now, it used to be some communities would allow for what's called staggered terms, where some members of the board would serve for a few years while others remained on for another year, and then the next year the other half of the board would run for re-election. That's called staggered terms, and some people would be able to, half the board basically would be able to stay on for 2 years or more. The legislature did away with staggered terms. Okay, there is no more such thing as staggered terms, and now each year everybody runs for re-election, period. And there's only one way to get staggered terms back. If your original documents allowed for staggered terms, now your community would have to vote all over again to re-adopt the staggered terms provision. But right now in your community, if they didn't do that, the bottom line is the people in your community, the people on that board, have to run for re-election. No two ways about it.
Okay.
Okay?
The thing is, in my community, the status is a... You got the status for 2 years, 3 years,
or
1 year.
SR, we got to go to a break, but the bottom line is in your community, regardless of what your documents say, the board members have to run for re-election in the next meeting, period. No two ways about it. We got to take a break. Again, taking your calls at 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this break.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro. We are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585. 877-850-8585.
All right, Karen, let's just finish up with some of the changes proposed by Senator Fasano's bill before we get to the bombshell bill that the governor's office is touting, which does away with CAMs and the Division of Condominiums.
Kaboom.
Yeah, this was a big one. But moving on to communities where there's mandatory membership and like a golf club, the current statute allows the association to enter into these membership agreements, but only as authorized in the Declaration of Condominium. Now, because a lot of these communities have simply become unaffordable and the homes contained in these communities real difficult to unload, the association would only force membership in these communities upon a vote of or written consent by a majority of all the total voting interests in that community.
Well, you know, I don't think that anybody out there is going to complain about this too much because, you know, people can't afford their condo assessments each month, never mind the membership in a golf community. But, Eric, we've had some experience where people stop paying for rec centers and community centers in Hollywood, California, and it could turn into a lot more trouble than you bargained for, if you remember correctly.
Understood. But not only do we get calls and inquiries about these types of communities, but I've even served as a mediator in disputes between owners and the club or the association. And there's simply a lot of people who may have at one time been able to afford a golf club lifestyle but can't do it any longer, and they want out but they can't get out because the next person buying their home is forced to be a member of the golf club community for exorbitant fees each month. So preventing a community from turning into a forced membership community without the majority in agreement is probably a very good thing. But all right, let's go to a little more controversial piece of pending legislation. As we know, the association was always able to charge delinquent owners attorney's fees, late charges, and interest. But now, this new proposal by Senator Fasano would allow the condo or HOA to charge, get this, for any reasonable expense for collection services incurred relating to the delinquent account. And the association can now lien for these additional amounts as well. And they get to lien for these amounts before a judge even says that these amounts are reasonable.
I guess for unit owners who actually want to save their homes, this statute may make it more expensive and maybe even impossible to do so.
Yeah, I would think that's true. But I guess on the other hand, if the association incurs additional charges from, let's say, their management company as a result of chasing a delinquent owner, the association should obviously be allowed to recoup those additional charges. My problem is that I've seen some collection agencies tack on, and I'm telling you, absolutely exorbitant collection fees against owners that aren't reasonable by any stretch of the imagination. And we're not talking about a few hundred dollars. We're talking about a few thousand dollars. And now the delinquent owner is going to be get lien for these absurd amounts. And unless he or she pays them, they're going to be named as a defendant in a foreclosure suit. So if Senator Fasano's staff is listening out there, I'd feel better if the statute contained a cap of some sort as to what a reasonable collection fee actually is.
You know, Eric, I just don't get it. There are all these collection companies out there, and they're not management companies. These are not the people that help you run your association. They're these specific firms that just come in and assist you in collection of maintenance services. And I've heard some of them will actually front condo associations the money that they're basically losing out on right now because of their accounts receivables, but then, you know, in the end, they're going to be paying up for it in tenfold with respect to the interest that's raised on the money they've been lent. It just baffles me, Eric. It just really baffles me that there are these companies that are coming in and preying on condo associations basically to prevent people from actually coming whole and getting the association running again. The purpose of collecting maintenance is to get people to pay their maintenance, not to make the fees so high that they can never pay it and your association's going to turn into a ghost town.
I'm with you on a lot of what you just said, and also what makes me even more skeptical, perhaps, of those types of companies are, in a lot of situations, the condo association is actually assigning to that company not only the delinquent account receivables, but all of the account receivables, period. Every single one, even for the people that are non-delinquent. So you tell me, how are they not acting as a management company, and how do they not need to be licensed as a management company?
More importantly, what do they exactly do? The statute says specifically what an association's rights are with respect to collecting maintenance. And in just the last few months, new laws have been passed to allow you to, you know, prevent people from using parts of the common elements like the pool and the gym. Well, if your condo doesn't have the ability to, you know, turn off a key to the gym or to the pool, what does this associate? What do these companies do? They come in and send security guards in to enforce this? What do they do?
It's tacking on exorbitant fees, and you just put pressure on until the unit owner cracks and either comes up with these exorbitant fees or finds themselves named as a defendant in a foreclosure action, and I'm against
this. This is a lose-lose situation for anybody that gets involved.
That's how I feel. How about we take Julie in Carl Springs? Julie,
hello?
You there? Hi, Julie.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, how can
Thank
we help you, Julie?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an HOA. I live in a townhouse. Prior to moving in, I had there was issues with the driveway. I have a paver brick driveway. I had asked the realtor to find out who would address these pavers, the driveways, the porches. She sent an email to the association. They sent her back an email saying that the association was responsible for it. I moved in the end of July. I started noticing we were having heavy rains for the summer, and I noticed that there was ponding issues, you know, huge puddling and ponding in the back of the unit, and that I noticed that my porch was, the pavers in the porch were starting to sink. I sent an email in August to the association. They responded back that they would address it. I heard nothing back. I kept following up. They were taking care of it. They were going to take care of it. I heard nothing back. Finally found out that the association, whoever was handling it, she had left. They got another person in her place. She said, no worries, I'll take care of it. She said, we're just going, there's two associations, there's the main association, and then the Each neighborhood has its own.
Well, Julie, let me cut you off for a second. Hold on 1 second. Where the ponding is occurring, are you positive that it's on community property, or is it on your own property that you own?
It's the whole entire length of the building.
Okay.
In the back of the, there's like three units in a building.
Okay.
So it's definitely common. The whole length of that.
Okay, so it's definitely common property, and the water is ponding. I've had a bunch of cases like that where the water piles up, and it winds up going into the first floor units, especially because there's a drainage, and occasionally again there's drainage issues in a lot of communities in Florida. But if it's fixable, then the association has the responsibility to fix it. Again, drainage issues are common sometimes. Well, we lost you, but I guess, again, if it's a drainage issue, sometimes we've had situations where we forced associations to install things like French drains and things of that nature. We actually hire experts to go out and do drainage testing on the property, and if it's something that is, in fact, if the property is not draining properly and an engineer can testify to that and the association can fix it, the association would have to fix it on their dime because your house can't keep getting flooded.
Right.
How about we take Lena in Sunrise?
Hi, Lena.
Hi, good day. I have a question in regards to the purchase of a condo we made in 2006, which has a builder's defect of water intrusion. Water keeps coming into the unit. It's the bottom floor. And apparently the seller slash developer knew about this before they sold it to us. The condo association has filed a lawsuit against the builders, but we do not benefit. But in the meantime, we have spent money repairing the wall that crumbled, the bathroom wall, and the water is continuously coming in. What sort of recourse do we have, if any?
Okay, there's a lot there. Now, if there's common elements that are decaying or crumbling and it's causing damage to your unit, regardless of the fact that the condominium association is suing the developer, and I'm glad that they am, that lawsuit can take years. In the interim, the condo association still has a duty to you to fix those common elements, whether they got to pass a special assessment to do it, then that's what they have to do. But the condo association has to do all that they can to make sure that your unit doesn't suffer damage. Again, regardless of the fact that they're suing the developer. So maybe,
or the builder, actually.
Right. And in other words, they may have to lay out the money and hope to be able to get it back from the developer. But in the interim, they have to make sure that your unit is protected, that the common areas are protected, and they do all they can to fix the problems that are causing damage to you, because that lawsuit with the developer can take forever. Okay, we got to go to another break, Lena.
Okay.
Again, taking everybody's calls, 877-850-8585. We will be back after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. We're wrapping up the hour. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here with Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro, attorneys from Glazer & Associates. Lots of phone calls. If you would like to call the show, give us a ring at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
All right. How about we go to Jan from the land? How are you, Jan?
I'm fine. Thanks a lot.
Thanks
but
for calling
I'm not
in.
Fine anymore after I read Rick Scott's bill.
Oh.
Which one are we? We're talking about the new one that's going to do away with cams?
Which is now actually HB 5005 for everybody who wants to take a look.
Thank you for that.
And you very much said Fasano would change the certification. This bill totally does away with all kinds of certifications. So no more courses, no more nothing.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I looked at that new bill, HB 5005, actually, and it, believe it or not, somehow, some way, it's still going to require that the directors have the option of taking a division-approved course. But the question becomes, but suppose there's no division, then how is that course going to get approved to begin with? So it is kind of...
On the new bill on line 4,295, it deleted is, in lieu of this written certification, the newly elected or appointed director may submit a certification of satisfactory completion of this educational curriculum administered by a division-approved condominium education provider, period.
Are you saying that's now been removed?
Yes.
Ah, okay. So, yep. So I guess there's going to be no more requirements of actually getting certified at any point, which is a shame. But, you know,
right, which is totally a shame. It is a good thing, should be there for HOAs as well, but hey, you know, what's the deal? But I would like, actually, the reason why I called was another one. Everybody claims it's saving tax funds and money if you deregulate these professions and if you do away with the division of condominiums, which is totally wrong. The regulation was paid by the profession, by the professionals, and the division was paid by the condo owners.
Right.
Every dime of it. Because now they can't raid the trust funds anymore if they're no longer there.
Right. And just to clarify.
Because last year, for example, the condo trust fund was raided by $10 million.
Right. And that when we say trust fund, just so we know what everybody else understands what we're talking about, every condominium unit in the state of Florida pays $4 per year into this trust fund. Is that right?
That is correct. That is 718-509.
Right. So the thinking is really... We're regulating ourselves. We're paying for our own regulation. But apparently Governor Scott doesn't see it that way.
And the thing is that they paid even more, and the trust funds were raided. So it does harm to the general tax fund because they can't use the raided trust fund money anymore.
I gotcha. So,
you know, so that is a very important thing, and that is what every condo owner and homeowner in the state of Florida should realize, that they're being fed false information,
so
that it is not saving one dime in general taxes.
All right, just so people know who you are, Jan, this is Jan Bergman from Cyber Citizens for Justice. If you want to visit his website, it's ccfj.net. Jan, quickly, can you tell us real quick about what CCFJ is?
Yeah, we are more or less a statewide organization dealing with the owner side of the issue, meaning we are trying to protect the owner's right in these community associations.
Right,
and we're lobbying for bills, and we are definitely trying to defeat bills like this one.
And we appreciate your call, Jan.
Yes.
Thank you very much for calling in, like always. Okay, how about we take, how about Stanley from Aventura?
Yes. Hi.
How are you, Stan?
Can you hear me?
Yes. How are you?
Hello?
Yes. You're there.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Stan. Let's go.
Okay. Let me tell you my sad saga. Our condo is experiencing great financial difficulty. They've raised our maintenance several times, and we've recently hired an expensive full-time property manager because we have an incompetent board, and our president, who's a smart woman, simply doesn't have the time or the willingness to deal with the minutia of running a condo.
Okay.
She's only interested basically in the money issues. Okay? We've cut back on services, including our pest control. And now I have little critters running around my apartment. So is there any statute or ordinance governing that?
Well, if the failure to exterminate the common areas is causing a problem in your unit, then the answer is yes.
Well, I don't know that it's the common areas. We used to have a biweekly exterminator coming in on Saturdays.
Right.
And he was invited into the units individually.
Right.
And they would pay him by the number of units he visited.
Well,
they cut that out. So I don't know. I mean, it's they're cockroaches, which are internal insects.
Well, again, this is something that's in your unit. So unless there's something specifically in your documents which gives the board the authority to execute a contract for, like, bulk extermination services, then no, they don't necessarily have to provide for extermination
provide
in every unit. Something you're going to probably have to do on your own.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sure. How about
I listen to your show. I enjoy it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stanley. Really appreciate it. How about quickly we go to Sal, line one. Sal, you
How
there?
How you doing? Thank you.
How are you, Sal?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm all right. Listen, if somebody doesn't pay an assessment on a condominium, what's the most that we can do to them?
Sal sounds like a tough guy from Brooklyn, so I don't know what you'd want to do to him. Sal. Makes us a little nervous. What can you do?
No, they live on Social Security, and they're in their 70s, and like they don't have the money, I guess, to pay the assessment. But we put a lien on them, that's about it.
Yeah, all kidding aside, you know, it's tough. You don't want to obviously file liens against people who are in their 70s and living on Social Security. But, you know, unfortunately, the only thing that you can do, if you try your best to work things out nicely, pleasantly, see if, you know, you can, you know, there's nothing wrong with knocking on your neighbor's door if you're on a board and say, hey, is there a problem? Can we talk about it? Do you need an extra month or two? You know, that's quite frankly what neighbors can do. It doesn't necessarily have to go immediately to a lien. Foreclosure action. You guys still live with each other. So I never had a problem with that. You know, actually asking your neighbor, hey, is there a problem this month? Do you need an extra month?
But
no big deal.
Okay, but if they refuse to pay, what would be
if
them,
they refuse
to
pay, that's right. Then the statute gives you, you know, certain remedies, one of which is to file a lien.
That takes a long time, right?
Well, here's how it works quickly. Well, we got about a minute to go. So here's the quick answer. In a condominium, before you actually file a lien against somebody, you have to give them notice that you're going to do it. You have to give them a 30-day notice. After the 30 days expires, then you have to prepare the lien. You send them a copy of that recorded lien, and you say, now you got another 30 days to pay up all amounts due, or we are foreclosing against you. That's the way it works. 30 days go by, they don't pay, now you can foreclose. And then it becomes real expensive for the owners. But thank you for the call, Sal.
All right,
I'm tired. Thank you for another great week. The phones have been crazy today.
Left some people on the line,
Thank you. Yeah, sorry for those that we didn't get to today. But great show. Appreciate everybody listening. We will see you next week here on Condo Craze and HOAs. Have a great week, everybody.